Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Do you guys feel like getting wild?
Sure, Patrick. What do you have in mind?
Well, I thought we could go down to that spot beneath Abrams Bridge and share a beer.
Man, you got a lot to learn. Okay, we set, guys?
I think so.
It is day two of Springsteen Week here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us all this week, first we have...
Intern Sam.
Intern Sam Lisker. Thank you, Sam, for being on the show this week and also for just everything you do. It's just, it's so appreciated, would you not say? Yeah, he's nodding his head.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely appreciate it. I mean, words cannot describe it.
That's right.
That's why
exactly
I didn't say anything.
Right. And then also we have our host for the week. We're at his house.
Yes. I'm Mike Schneider. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us, Mike. As always.
And Mike is a big Springsteen guy. You know, it's funny. I apologize, Mike. I kind of forgot how big of a Springsteen guy you are when I asked you if you wanted to be on these shows. Because first thing I think of in terms of your music fandom, I think of Tom Petty. Yep. Is that your favorite artist?
Probably that is the artist I saw the most live.
Yes.
Yes.
That just has clouded all my judgment
impressions
in terms of impressions.
Yes.
That's the word I'm looking for in terms of that. So, but Springsteen, also you're a big fan and you saw the Springsteen on Broadway show.
Yes. You talked about this time last year.
Before, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
that's tremendous.
That actually goes into, in some ways, Springsteen is, I think you may have said he's underrated. He's often forgotten and taken for granted, almost.
Taken for granted, yeah.
And I know we don't want to go off too much, but that, yeah. I just wanted to get that out there before I forget about it.
I think we're going to get into that in these next couple of days when we talk about just the volume of work that he did on these next couple of albums. It's more than just what you actually hear on the finished product. We'll get to that in a second. Today we are talking about Darkness on the Edge of Town. And the reason we're going through these five records this week is because Springsteen has a new album called Western Stars coming out this Friday, which apparently, from what I've heard like three songs. It's a bit of a departure for him, but he's also like 69 years old
or whatever. He
should be trying out some different stuff and going different directions.
Things, yeah.
We decided to focus this week on an amazing run of five consecutive records. It would be, I'm not sure what other artist, you know, you could put up and you could say, like, take five consecutive albums and put them up against these five. There's probably only a couple others out there you could say that they could have this kind of run.
Yeah. I was doing some homework and just happened to, I usually don't look at the comments on allmusic.com because they usually are one way or the other too much.
Right.
But I saw this person wrote, Born to Run, Darkness, The River, Nebraska could be the greatest string of four albums ever released since the dawn of recorded music. Nebraska is Springsteen's basement tapes, but even more unique and unexpected considering the arc of his previous increasingly complex work. Here the lyrics and the storytelling dominate. That's more about Nebraska, but I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just, that's very eloquent from someone I have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
But they just took time to put on the review of Nebraska on allmusic.com.
So let me just set this up here real quickly. Darkness on the Edge of Town is an extremely important record Bruce's career because, as we mentioned yesterday, he found great success with Born to Run at a time when he really needed it. And we didn't even talk yesterday, too, but that album, Born to Run, sold very well.
Yes.
was a hit on the charts and all of that. And also landed him on the covers of Time and Newsweek.
Simultaneously.
Right? At the same time, right? I mean, that's what a explosion was on the scene, really, commercially and, you know, in terms of appealing to the mainstream that it was for Springsteen, culturally, I think is what I'm trying to say. I mean, to a lot of people, he sort of like was bringing back rock and roll,
before
we had the punk revolution and everything. This kind of presaged that in a way that he was kind of going back to sort of the roots of what rock and roll was supposed to be and the excitement and the enthusiasm and the passion and all of that. So then how do you follow that up? What do you do? Because for a lot of artists, it would be that's probably your biggest challenge, right? Like when you finally have that breakthrough album, what do you do next? Well, it's but that blood had never burned in her veins. Now here she's got a house up Story is also, I think, really interesting here because there's like a 3-year gap
right
between the release of these albums, which in the mid 70s, that was like an eternity in the record business. Yeah. You know, if you didn't have another album out like the next year, you might as well be gone. Right. Like that's it. You're done. Right. And why did he have that big gap?
Well, it is interesting, Jim. You know, Bruce, as we mentioned briefly yesterday, had been playing in bands for many years, you know, until he got signed to CBS Records. His first two records did not sell well. They took radically different approaches. Then finally, as you said, he broke through with Born to Run. But in that quest to become, you know, the person he wanted to be, to become great, he signed a pretty bad management deal that a lot of artists signed with a guy called Mike Appel, an ex-military guy who tried to run Bruce's career in a certain way. And the man who later became Bruce's manager, John Landau, had written at one point, I've seen the future of rock and roll and its name is Bruce Springsteen. And Columbia Records picked up on that quote, and the hype nearly sunk Bruce. You know, after Born to Run came out, he didn't know if he was going to hang through, but he also was tied to this really bad management deal that he knew he had to get out of. So there was legal wrangling that really prevented him from recording for a couple of years. And if you listen to a lot of live stuff after Born to Run and pre-Darkness, you'll often hear Bruce at the beginning of the show say, "Bootleggers, roll your tapes." And like, he knew people were bootlegging his music to kind of keep it alive. And that's the way he sort of did. You know, the tape trading and the fanatical following his live shows had developed at that point. I mean, even at this point in his career, he was playing 3-hour live sets,
right?
And you know, they were bootlegged. You know, he would do live shows on the radio, WMMR in Cleveland, and all this stuff. And
he was continuing to play a lot of live shows even through this period, what you're saying.
Never
right?
stopped touring,
That's really how he made money.
Yeah, exactly. That's how he kept it going, and he was debuting a lot of new songs and trying them out. A tremendous amount of songs were written during this period, but that was really the problem. He was trying to straighten out his management deal and get John Landau in as his manager, and I think the E Street Band really solidified during that time. They became this live powerhouse, and Bruce was writing pretty consistently. And a lot of the themes of that struggle and overcoming hardships and all the obstacles are obviously, you know, written about in this album. I think right off the jump, you crack into Badlands. You got to live it every day, so you know that that's the pain and the struggle he was going through. And you know, obviously in Promised Land and a lot of these songs like Racing in the Street, people are toiling with potentially no end in sight or no light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh yeah. Well, this is a big theme that comes out in this record. Yeah. So okay, first off, let's just say this album has 10 songs.
It does.
So you get two more
than
what you got with Born to Run. There's no 9.5 minutes here, but there is one, Racing in the Street, that's almost 7 minutes.
Yes.
So you do have some length there. But for the most part, this is a pretty tight pop rock and roll record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's, how would you guys say it differs sort of in tone from Born to Run?
Well, it's darker.
Yeah.
For one thing.
It comes right out and says
that. Yeah, it says it's going to be dark. You know, the first word on the top of on the front of the album. You know, we mentioned this earlier, but he was a film fan. He said this album, particularly film and country music, weighed in here.
Interesting.
Also, he said that he was buying punk records at the same time. Wow. So he was trying to channel some of that energy that he was getting from punk without, you know, losing, you know, what made him special. Just as in Born to Run, he said, "I need to make this music leaner." He said he wanted the music to be leaner and more focused. And I think he did. He said it by the end of this album, he'd found his adult voice. And he really wanted to pay tribute to the people in his community, the blue collar community. And, you know, his father, you know, was a blue collar worker, and probably most of the people he knew was a blue collar worker. And he said, this is from his book. He says, he called him a community under siege, and he wanted to present that with these songs. And I think you really feel the pressure of the everyday person, you know, in these songs, a little bit different than, you know, like these cinematic songs from Born to Run, you know, felt like, yeah, you know, could be, weren't really like someone you might know. It's just things happening kind of like in The Godfather or something.
Yeah.
This is like the dude next door is going through this stuff.
I was just going to say, this record feels a little bit more like he's writing about other people, people he knows, more than about himself, which I think maybe Born to Run felt a little bit more autobiographical in a lot of ways. I mean, this is, I think a lot of these songs are based on people in his life or people he observed, but it does feel a little bit more like he's trying to tell other people's stories.
Yeah, he says on the at his live Broadway show, this is the only time in my life I've had a 5-day work week. I've never worked in a factory. Right. You know, and he says, that's how good I am. I can fake this and tell the stories. And Factory is a song, you know, as we start, I'm going to jump right into the middle of the album here somewhere, but it seems to fit here. You know, that main character is just called Man.
Yeah.
Man rises from bed, takes his lunch to work. You know, his singing is almost monotone.
Mm-hmm.
And the work, you know, the work in life is repetitive, almost like a production line. You know, and these guys that are working there have death in their eyes, and somebody's going to get hurt tonight when they got off work. I mean, that just, you're at pressure at work, you're at pressure after work. I mean, that captured, you know, I was going to talk about this more on the next album, but this really captured the blue collar life I grew up in. And that's one way I connected to this music.
And I think as much as there's a sense of despair on this album a lot, though, too, but I also think what he's upset about is that the people who live a life like that aren't respected enough, or that they don't feel the kind of pride that they should in what they do. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, it's difficult and you sort of repeat the same thing every day. But then the other side of that is that, that's honest. That's good. There's something pure to that. There's something that should be respected more, and that's unfortunate that they didn't receive that, and that they had to live sort of hard life at work and outside of work, like you said. Yeah. Sam, I know you're a big fan of Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Big fan of it. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned yesterday when we were discussing Born to Run, this was the album that introduced me to Springsteen, the album that I listened to all the way through. And what I really liked about it is, like you all have touched on, the blue-collar lifestyle and the sort of self-narrative tone that Springsteen has throughout this album, I think really is what completes this whole thing, because it's an album that was well received by both critics and fans. I think Rolling Stone ranked it at number 51 on their best albums of all time list, and but it never really saw any chart success. I think one of his songs, I'm blanking on which song it was, but the song that was from the album that went the highest it ever went on the chart, I think, was number 94, and that's about as high as that album really peaked when it came out, which is really a shame, because it's a dive from when you're Born to Run is a great predecessor to this, because Darkness on the Edge of Town has a sense of rebellion. And like you mentioned, Mike, he was listening to a lot of punk records at the time, and he integrated those themes into Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is really what made it phenomenal. And it would eventually, I think, this is a perfect album that leads into eventually Nebraska, which would come out a few years later.
Well said, Sam. And and it's interesting that it appealed to you out of these five so strongly. And it does appeal to me tremendously, too. And I think, you know, Mike said leaner, you know, or starker. Those are the words that come to my mind. There's no wall of sound production here. There's no Phil Spector. Everything is cut to the quick. The drums boom and they echo, and the piano is, you know, haunting when it comes in and it plays an important part. And Clarence's work is much more forlorn, you know, than it is. There's not that joy that, you know, you had on some of those songs. And, you know, I think, interestingly enough, like, there's a theme of racing and a theme of cars on this record, too. And Rattlesnake Speedway in the Utah desert is a very evocative thing. And obviously Racing in the Street. But these people, these characters in these songs are not racing for joy or for success. It's something they do out of some drive that they don't even really understand themselves. You know, they work all day and then somehow they have to go any, you know, I pick up my money and I head back into town. Like, there's no joy in that. It's, I'm driven by something I can't really define, but I keep on doing it and I don't really know why. And I think that's a really interesting thing. The song on this record to me that it kind of means the most, and maybe I'm jumping ahead because I know we're going to talk about our favorites, but this is one of my favorites on an album with many favorites, is Candy's Room. And I'll tell you, I don't know about you, Sam, but do you ever have one of those friends who can't do anything unless somebody's doing it with them?
Yes.
Like, unless somebody's doing something with this guy, you know, he's got to have somebody to do it. And I had a friend like that. His name was Richard Byers, a great guy. But he couldn't even walk to school. Like, we used to walk to high school. He couldn't even walk to school by himself. Oh. So I went over to his house every morning and basically sat there while he got ready.
Oh, boy.
But he, you know, he was one of those guys. But we used to play Candy's Room. And the line that would get us was... baby, if you want to get wild, you got a lot to learn. Man, we had a lot to learn at that time in our lives. So much that really appealed to us. But at the end of that song, you know, when it builds up to that, what she wants is me, and those voices kind of answer each other and they ping pong. The song is only like 2 minutes 40 or 2 minutes 35 or something like that. It's an incredible piece of work. Like, it shows the craftsmanship that Bruce had. And I just... that song was so evocative. We used to listen to Darkness before we walked to school. While he was getting ready, I would put on Darkness every morning and wait. And I have a very vivid memory of that. But that raw guitar solo that busts through Candy's Room, too, is really amazing. And that hi-hat at the beginning, you know, just that when it starts off is really incredible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I got a lot to say here. I'm sorry.
Man. That's okay.
Well, first of all, I want to say, addressing the darkness of this record, the big gap between records meant also, beyond the touring that we talked about, they were doing a lot of recording.
Yes,
and
tons.
They recorded a lot. Bruce and the band recorded a lot of songs that didn't make it on here. So there's a lot of other stuff. And
some famous ones.
If you listen to some of those outtakes, you can hear some more upbeat stuff and some more joyous things. Mm-hmm. But I think his own mood of going through that legal battle and all those, you know, and just trying to like get things right in his own life just led him to want to, you know, reflect that in the music that he wanted to put out, right? And so by the end of this, when it was finally time to get the record out and pick the tracks that were going to be on it, it was like, this is where his head was at, right?
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly.
Oh, and can I just say, by the way, that this also starts the period where, I think, this starts the period where he's like giving away songs to other people,
yeah,
right?
That's exactly
so
right.
So one of the songs that he gave away from these sessions was Because the Night.
That's
right
to Patti Smith.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a masterpiece of a song,
really,
right?
Is.
Just be like, go ahead, here, you can have this. Yeah. Okay, but I want to get back to Racing in the Street for just a second here real quick, because you talked about how it's like, to anybody else who did a car song, right, it would be like an upbeat, fun, like joyous, exciting, enthusiastic song or whatever. This is an extremely sad song,
it really
right?
Is.
But, you know, you mentioned like it's something these guys just sort of do, but it's like, what he's basically, I think, trying to say is sort of like, this is like the one little bit of joy they get in their lives, you know? Mm-hmm. They, like I said, they kind of have to do it because everything else is so bleak. Or
that's exactly
you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
And it's really reflected when you look at these lyrics. I mean, just these lines right here. Some guys, they just give up living and start dying little by little, piece by piece. And some guys come home from work and wash up and go racing in the street, right?
Yeah, amazing.
I mean, that just says so much about sort of like, the American experience, you know, the human experience, I guess. But and then later, you know, the song gets into the story of this woman who he met. Oh, my God. When you just read this stuff, it's unbelievable. You know, the wrinkles around my baby's eyes and she cries herself to sleep at night. When I come home, the house is dark. She says, baby, did you make it all right? She sits on the porch of her daddy's house, but all her pretty dreams are torn. She stares off alone into the night with the eyes of one who hates for just being born.
That is about as dark as it gets on the edge of town, man. Yes.
I mean, that's a song.
That is really a song.
And that's the kind of song that I think when you first listen to this record, maybe you don't even, it doesn't even really register.
No, exactly.
Because on this same record, you do have, you know, some songs that have some real life to them, like Badlands and Prove It All Night.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other big hit?
Promised Land.
Promised Land. Yes. Yeah, yes, yes, exactly. You know, so, I mean, those songs have some, musically, just, you know, have some beat to them and some life to them and everything.
Right.
And so maybe first time you listen, it's the end of side one, Racing in the Street. Yeah, okay, that's a nice little song, whatever. But that's the song, I think, that sticks with you over time.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, well said. And, you know, to follow up on that point, he also, during this time, wrote Fire that he gave to the Pointer Sisters and Rendezvous that he gave to Greg Kinn. So,
Rendezvous.
Really good songs that he wrote and kind of gave away. And, you know, the other thing I think I'll say about Darkness is that it probably represented the first full flowering of Bruce's songwriting confidence. I don't think he was particularly confident on Born to Run. There weren't a ton of outtakes. There are some, but they're not like this. And, you know, obviously time helped that, but also that he had the ability to shapeshift and write these sort of short rockabilly songs or a love song like Fire or something like Because the Night, and then really focus his vision on these dark songs. And think about the title track. I mean, at one point, the line is, if she wants to see me, you know, tell her I'm easily found. There's a spot under a bridge in the darkness on the edge of town. And that's where you have to go to find me because I'm just under a bridge like a troll. I'm so dark and depressed.
Yeah.
And I will say one more quick personal story. Among my group of friends, we developed a catchphrase that was kind of the opposite of Darkness on the Edge of Town. So when something was cruel and it was going to happen and it was going to be like pretty sweet, we used to say, Sweetness on the Edge of Town. That's the opposite.
Nice.
What's happening? There's a party tonight. Sweetness on the Edge of Town. I'll be there.
All right. Any last thoughts from you guys?
Sam mentioned this a bit ago. I mean, this album eventually, I mean, I'm sure it's still selling today, went double platinum, whereas Born to Run went six times platinum.
Right.
So it didn't reach as far. But I mean, I think among Springsteen lovers, you know, this one probably is above Born to Run. Now, I will say that in a Rolling Stone reader poll of the best of Springsteen in 2012, Born to Run came in one, Darkness came in two, and River came in three. I would guess you could do that every 10 years. And if you did it, you know, let's see, it's 7 years later, you could possibly see this album be number one among fans.
Yep.
I think this is definitely a fan record. You know, this is the one where people were like, okay, Born to Run was great, but you know, what's really going to prove it is what do you do next? And this had sort of all the things that the fans loved about Bruce in it that maybe some of the casual fans, you know, was less impressive, right?
Yep.
But to the true fan, this was like, this is a real record, man.
Absolutely. And I will say here, in all honesty, what I had written in my notes was, Darkness has come to be, for me anyway, the definitive Springsteen album.
Yeah.
With Darkness and While the Innocent, you know, those I could live with those two and be happy. That's what I wrote in my notes. The other thing, as I'm thinking through these songs and calling back on listening to it, was I think the harmonica playing on this record is pretty amazing. Like Bruce, it's very stark and meaningful in these songs in a way that it never was previously in his catalog. So just wanted to put a shout out for the old mouth harp.
And you like to, right, that's great. You like to always mention too, the cover of the album art, the album cover. I think people know what it looks like, right? But what do you think of this one?
You know, it's very strange to
it
me.
It is strange.
It's very stark. He's in a rundown hotel or you know, he's standing in front of these Venetian blinds looking unshaven and maybe a little twisted and maybe worse for the wearer. It doesn't look like a guy who's ascending, you know, to be a rock star and is on top of his game. He looks troubled and haunted.
I always thought it was so odd of a choice that
really
like
is.
Flowered wallpaper.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a rock star record
at all.
Especially again for where he was at this point.
That's right. Yeah.
I forget the name of the photographer, but he tells the story in the book of how he had a friend of his knew this photographer who took these stark real world photos and he went with this person and said, "This fits."
Yeah.
And it certainly does. I mean, it's like this is an average dude on the front. He's getting ready to go out. You know, he's got his leather jacket on. And the inside, he's either getting ready to go to work or just got home from work. You know, he's got his white, you know, T-shirt.
Yeah,
it does.
V-neck T-shirt.
But
it's,
but think about again at the time. This is 1978. Like, think of other big rock stars. You guys like Rod Stewart or Elton John.
Do you
or
think
like,
I'm sexy?
Like
I don't think anybody'd say, "Do you think I'm sexy?" On this,
not
they,
at all.
They would never put out a record with a cover that looked like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you could be sitting at a dive bar and, you know, on the corner in New Jersey and this guy being in there or Kansas or, you know, the Utah desert. Yeah, and he would not look out of place.
Okay, and then favorite song from this record. So I'll go first here. I'm going to say obviously it's Racing in the Street.
With the eyes of one who waits for just being born. For all the shut down strangers and hot
that my baby and me were gonna ride to the sea and wash these sins off our hands. Tonight, tonight, the highway's bright out of our way, mister, you best keep. 'Cause summer's here and the time is right. Racing in the street.
I will, though, I want to put out a shout out here for Badlands because it actually might be my favorite, like, live Springsteen song. Mm-hmm. I just love it. But also, I think it has a couple of lines in that song that I think are so expertly written and that so describe pretty much everything you need to know about life, which is poor man want to be rich, rich man want to be king, a king ain't satisfied until he rules everything. There you go, that's it, that's all you need to know.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely choose Candy's Room.
In Candy's Room, there are pictures of her heroes on the wall. To get to Candy's Room, had a walk, darkness at Candy's Hall. Strangers from the city call my baby's number and they bring her toys. When I come knocking, she smiles pretty. She knows I want to be Candy's boy. There's a sadness hidden in that pretty face, a sadness all her own, from which no man can keep Candy safe. We kiss, my heart rushes through my brain, and the blood rushes in my veins, the fire rushes through the sky. Driving deep into the night. I go driving deep into the light. Candy's eyes. She says, baby, if you wanna be wild, you got a lot to learn. Close your eyes, let them melt, let them fire, let them burn. 'Cause in the darkness, we'll be hidden worlds that shine.
Also, as you said, Jim, expertly written. Think about Adam Raised a Cain. I mean, that's some use of words and wordplay, and also the dynamics of the drums and his singing on this record. He's howls on many of these tracks in a tortured way.
We didn't mention that, but it's also like one of the like hardest rock songs absolutely that he's ever done, too. Yeah. He's not really, I mean, the E Street Band, and as good of a guitarist as Bruce is, it's not really a guitar-driven band. It's more of a keyboard-driven kind of sound for the most part. But that one's a real rock song. It and when you stings. See that, and like Nils now, he wasn't in the band at this point, but he's kind of taken over that whenever they need that great lead guitar stuff. Man, he kills on this song. But
and I have to say, my favorite song off of this album probably has to be The Promised Land. Mm. It's just, it's a track about somebody who is trying to be somebody, or is trying to be better than who they are. As they're describing themselves in this track, like just these last couple of lines here. There's a dark cloud rising from the desert floor. I pack my bags and I'm heading straight into the storm. So the protagonist knows that whatever they're trying to achieve isn't going to come easy, and it's going to take a lot of work, and there's going to be just a lot of fighting to get to where they want to go out of this hole that they're in.
I will say, as much as there's like darkness on this whole record, that one though has the Springsteen sort of hallmark of there being some hope.
Exactly.
Within
I was
that, right?
Say that
no matter, you know, like there's a feeling that like you can fight your way out of this, that there's I believe that there's this promised land. I believe there's something that you can reach if you work to get there, yeah. right? It's also a very Woody Guthrie kind of song,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
It's like, mm-hmm. it really has that kind of, it's almost like he studied
yeah.
That kind of music and said, like, I can write a song like yeah. that. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I agree with all that. I will pick Badlands from yeah. seeing many Springsteen shows. This has been, it's a highlight of the live performance. It is, you know, the wordsmith may not, it's a different kind of song than like Candy's Dream or Racing in the Street, but it's a great rock song. The band is totally engaged when you play this, when you see this mm-hmm. live. And it has a bit of a hope here. I mean, it's, you know, at the end it says, you know, it ain't no sin to be glad you're alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I may take this bullshit all week, but I'm going to have some fun somewhere along the line. And somebody, and if I don't, somebody gets in my way, they're going to pay. As a film fan, there's a yes. movie called oh, Badlands, yeah. so right. there's an evocative aspect there, too. So
it also touches on a theme that he hits from time to time, that idea of, like, dreams. What are our dreams, and can we ever really achieve them, yeah. or what does that mean in terms of, like, what we're striving for? And there's a line in Badlands about, talk about a dream, try to make it real. You wake up in the night with a fear so real. Mm-hmm. You spend your life waiting for a moment that just don't come. I mean, there is always that sort of conflict between you want to strive for your dreams, but at the same time, is it like fool's gold in some exactly. way, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Don't waste your time waiting.
Right. But then getting back to the hope too, I think this always is like one of those exciting parts of a song that just like makes you just feel great in some way when it gets to that part. I believe in the love that you gave me. I believe in the faith that can save me. I believe in the hope, and I pray that someday it may raise me
yeah.
above these Badlands, right? You know, so again, it's like there is a belief that things will get better. All right, I'm exhausted.
Yeah,
we're only two-fifths of the yeah. way through.
Okay, let's get out of here. So right. If you have anything you want to say about Darkness on the Edge of Town,
please
email us rock@suburbspod.com, or better yet, call and leave a message on our hotline, and we'll put your voice on an upcoming show. That number is 612-440-1984. There you go. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. And then real quickly, I want to mention we have a live event coming up. We're going to talk about REM.
Oh, yeah.
More specifically, an author of the book Begin the Begin, REM's early years. His name is Robert Dean Lurie. He's going to talk about REM, and mm-hmm. we're going to record a little interview with him and take questions from the audience and so on. He's going to do a book reading, book signing, all that kind of stuff.
Can't wait.
And it's free, and it's on Tuesday, June 25th, starting at 6:30 at the O Museum in the Mansion. That is at 2020 O Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. I mentioned it's free, but you do have to reserve a spot. So go to suburbspod.com, and we'll have a link there where you can reserve your free spot. Come on out. We'll be there. We'll be talking with Robert. We'll take your questions, and we'll record it all for the pod.
Can't wait.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Sam Lisker.
I'm Mike Snyder.
And tomorrow, the river. We'll talk to you then.
I came up with a great first line for a country song. You guys need to help me finish it. Okay, you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Life's hard, but so is hard living.
Life's hard, so is hard living.
There it is. Think about it.
Something drinking, women. Channing,
The love you're giving.
That's true.
Like that.
This might be the guy. Yeah, he knows all that stuff. Yeah.